Welcome back to the Our Voices feed. I'm Aaron White, the North America editor for Our Economy. What you're about to listen to is an interview conducted by myself and our podcast producer, Freddie Stewart, with Samelis Lopez, who was running to represent New York's 15th congressional district. Born in Puerto Rico and raised in the South Bronx, Lopez is looking to replace Congressman Jose Serrano, who is retiring due to Parkinson's disease. Endorsed by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Democratic Socialists of America, the Working Families Party, and other progressive organizations, Lopez is consolidating coveted support in this packed primary set to take place on June 23rd. We had the pleasure of sitting down with Samelis Lopez a couple months ago in a small Hispanic cafe in the South Bronx called Mi Casa Bakery, so please excuse any background noise. From emphasizing how her lived experience of homelessness has informed her support for a national homes guarantee, to the inspiration that she has taken from the squad, Lopez discusses why political representation should center those who are most oppressed. So we began by asking her to tell us a bit about her background and the congressional race that she is running in.
I'm Puerto Rican and Dominican. I was born in Bayamo, Puerto Rico, and my mother's from the Dominican Republic. And when she divorced my dad, she came to the United States, to New York City, to work as a seamstress to make ends meet. So there were oftentimes, many times, that we couldn't afford childcare. So she would pick me up from my elementary school, and then we would end up there at her sweatshop where she worked, and I would do my homework at her sweatshop. And that was a daily reality for us as a family. And then unfortunately, she ended up being in a domestic violence situation with my stepfather. And then in order to escape the abuse that was going on at home, we ended up in the homeless shelter system in Brownsville, New York, where I grew up, basically, and my brother was born. And then afterwards, we ended up getting what's called here a Section 8 voucher. And we moved to the Bronx around the time that I was 10 years old. So I've been in the South Bronx ever since.
And can I ask, so where did your life in politics start? What politicized you? Who are your inspirations?
Right. Definitely my mom, the immigrant community here in the Bronx, the civil rights movement, basically my personal struggles and my mom's struggles with homelessness, with domestic violence, and seeing her survive that. I think a lot of people in this congressional district in the South Bronx have that spirit of resiliency that defines us as a community. And basically, I look at people like my mom and the people of the South Bronx for that inspiration. And that commitment that I have to always be on the path of social justice and fight for the community, fight for the working class, the oppressed, because it's really those lived experiences that define us as human beings and connect us to working class communities and the struggle.
And when did you take that experience, take that desire to fight for social justice and realize, hey, this is what I want to do with this, is run for office? When was the moment that you decided that that was what you wanted to achieve?
It was a winding path. I don't think anybody wakes up and says, you know, I'm going to run for office today. I think it was a progression for me. So my lived experiences definitely informed my perspective on life, my commitment to, like I said, social justice. And then I went on to college and then graduate school. And it was when I went to college that I realized that I really grew up in the tale of two cities. There were people in college that never experienced anything that I went through growing up. And I felt like, well, this is not right. This is something systemic now that we need to address, and I personally need to study. So I took sociology classes, history classes to figure things out, and learned a little bit about social movements and things like that. And then I realized that it's a systemic, oppressive system that is oppressing people in the community. So I learned a little bit about that. And then after I graduated college, I interned at this organization called the National Association of Latino Elected Officials, which teaches you about government and policy. And then after your fellowship, they place you with an elected official. And the elected official that I ended up being placed with was Congressman Serrano, who's now stepping down because he has Parkinson's disease. And there's going to be an election on June 23rd, 2020 to replace him. So he really gave me my first shot at public service. And through his leadership, I ended up seeing what you can do when you get involved in politics. And at that time, when I was a congressional aide for his office, he did a lot in terms of the environmental justice movement here in the Bronx. So he reached out to different frontline community organizations that are basically have always been putting their lives on the line for the environmental movement. well before this became a household name, right? And they've always been at the front lines. And Congressman Serrano like took leadership from them. And I think that's what representation should be about. It should be about always centering the lives of the most directly impacted and making sure that they have a real seat at the policymaking table so that we can come up with laws and policies that look like us, that feel like us, right? And that's basically what I learned in Serrano's office, that you can use politics as a way of building community and being willing to be accountable to a movement.
I'd like to, speaking of movements, I'd like to speak about like DSA and, yeah, sorry, we're kind of in a weird, in a weird setting here. But could you just describe, I know you're a member of DSA, right?
Yes.
And also, and they endorse your campaign. So I could like to speak about the significance of them within the relationship of your campaign, but also within kind of this movement more generally that's been challenging the Democratic establishment, endorsing figures such as AOC and Julia Salazar.
Definitely. I mean, I'm so grateful to the Democratic Socialists of America. And one of the things that I spoke to them about during my endorsement process is that there's no other county in the entire country that is most similar to DSA in terms of the values and the mission of what DSA stands for. So like I was saying before, I'm sure you all know in the South Bronx, there's a lot of oppression. There's working class struggle. There's people basically losing their lives and leaving lives that are not dignified because of these oppressive systems that have kept us down. So my pitch to DSA was, you know, we all need to be involved in this race because the South Bronx embodies the values that DSA stands for, which is fighting against worker exploitation, fighting for the most marginalized in our communities, and breaking down that capitalistic system that keeps everybody down and profits off of people's pain and their humanity.
Would this be one of the poorest districts, right? This is the poorest district in Congress, I believe, the South Bronx.
It is, that's what's said. But one of the things that I want to challenge people on, that I don't think it should be defined as the poorest congressional district. We definitely have a set of economic challenges, but what I've been seeing on the campaign trail is that this borough is very resilient and there's a lot of creativity. And this is a birthplace of hip-hop. This is like where the Young Lords came from, the Black Panthers came from. So this community has a very resilient, revolutionary, socialist spirit that, you know, combines very well with DSA and what we're all fighting for in the leftist community, not only here locally, but around the world. I think that South Bronx should be looked at as a global thought leader in everything, in the environmental justice movement, and the housing movement, because when the South Bronx had its challenges back in the day, when the landlords were burning the buildings for the insurance money, there were people that stayed here in the community and never left and made it what it is today. And I credit the South Bronx with being my version of the American dream because it gave me a second shot at life. So I think that, fine, we do have economic challenges, but there's a lot to be proud of in the Bronx, and I think that there's local solutions here that people in the environmental justice community and the affordable housing community here in the Bronx, people should be looking at them globally so that we can implement their local solutions nationally and globally.
I know that one of the central parts of your campaign is the Homes Guarantee and guaranteeing affordable housing for everyone. I was wondering if you can speak to that a little bit.
Sure.
What that means to you.
That's, again, informed my personal experience. So the Homes Guarantee is a national platform that has been developed by many grassroots organizations and people that are on the verge of being homeless or have been homeless. And they came up with this platform to basically decommodify housing and take the profit element out of housing and target land speculation that basically preys on the community. And having a system of reparations, in a sense, because a lot of communities like the South Bronx and communities of color in the United States were redlined back in the day. So there's generations of disinvestment. And the Homes Guarantee is the answer to that disinvestment. And that the racist housing policies that were conducted decades ago that we're still suffering from. So then the Homes Guarantee is an answer to that. And it's, you know, it's seeking to decommodify housing so that we can combat homelessness and guarantee that in the richest country in the world, there's no people living homeless on the street like I once did with my family. So that's the significance of the Homes Guarantee for me.
So obviously, talking of the Homes Guarantee, we're in the midst of a Democratic primary race for president at the moment. And I wondered if I could get your opinion on whether you think housing and how we deal with the housing crisis in this country is given the attention in those debates and in the media that you feel it deserves.
No, it hasn't. And there really should be, because there's a national crisis on homelessness. Specifically in New York State alone, there are a lot of children that are homeless and they're struggling with these issues. And I think it should be given that platform, because there's a lot of predatory tendencies in the real estate developer community. And we basically need to decommodify this whole system. And I think one of the conversations that needs to be had that we're having on our campaign is the importance of taking big money out of politics and challenging people that are running for office and challenging them to say, if you are running a race that's for the community, like, you're not going to accept certain kinds of donations. And right now in this race, in particular, there's a lot of corporate Democrats that are taking huge sums of money from real estate developers, from the pharmaceutical industry, from corporate PACs. So it's a time to put an end to that, because this congressional district is experiencing a very dire gentrification and a displacement crisis that's threatening to clean out this borough. And we can't allow that. And we have to challenge that connection. And it's not only one candidate that's taking this money. It's many different corporate elected officials, corporate Democratic elected officials running in this race that either have had histories of taking this money in the past or are taking that kind of money now. And, you know, we need to basically fundraise in a way that centers the needs and the values and the perspectives that directly impact the communities. And that's not it. We need to put the community first, not the donors.
One of the things that's begun to enter the national conversation in terms of housing is the idea of national rent control. Obviously, that's something that Bernie Sanders has begun to introduce into the discourse. On a state level, obviously, we've seen here with the state Senate and Julia Salazar in particular making efforts to implement rent control. I wondered if you could speak to how that has sort of impacted your district and how you stand on rent control.
Oh, absolutely. I think that we need national rent control, and we also need to explore national commercial rent control too, to preserve the small businesses in our community. So I'm definitely on board, and that's a key element of the Homes Guarantee platform as well. I'm grateful to the leadership of people like Julia Salazar, that she held herself accountable to a movement, because the rent regulations that were passed this spring was a movement. An activist on the ground that got together and mobilized and made countless trips to Albany to make their voices heard. And it was people like Julia Salazar that were part of this new progressive political class of New York State senators that paved that path. So it demonstrated that when you have a movement on the ground that's supported by the right political environment, that is willing to be held accountable to movement on the ground, there's no telling what we can do together as a community. And that was an example of how when politics meets a movement, what can happen.
And you mentioned before how you're not taking any money from the real estate lobby and how some of the other candidates in your race are. I was wondering if you can speak to some of the challenges that you have running kind of a grassroots campaign without taking those big dollar kind
of money.
That's
a little more challenging, yeah. Because we have to rely on money from the community. And even though it's been challenging, I'm very proud of the fact that out of anybody who's running in this race, we've raised a lot of money from the residents here in the Bronx. And we have about 1,000 individual grassroots donations, which I'm really proud of. So even though it's challenging, the fundraising that we've done shows a story that we have that local support, that local enthusiasm. I mean, I encourage people to donate as little as $2, a dollar, especially if they're from the community, because it gives them a sense of ownership over the local political process. And that's what we have to encourage our communities to see this as. It's an investment in the future, in the present. So even though we're not doing as well as other people in this race that are taking all these corporate funds and real estate developer funds, I know I go to sleep at night knowing that we're fundraising in the way that the community deserves and in a way that's going to hold me accountable. So I'm really happy with how we're doing in fundraising. So I encourage people to go to lopezforthepeople.com if you want to, you know, donate a little bit to keep us afloat so we can feed our volunteers and bring out the message into the community and print out literature.
Great. And another part of your campaign, which is central, is the Green New Deal. And right now, I think in the South Bronx, I think it has one of the highest pollution rates
Definitely.
In the country. I was wondering if you could speak to what a Green New Deal would mean to the people in your district, in your community.
No, absolutely. People love the concept of the Green New Deal in the South Bronx for the reasons that you just said. There's high rates of asthma, respiratory illnesses, because of the way that the infrastructure and the highways have cut up our neighborhoods. So people are welcoming that idea into the community. And what we need to do also, in addition to looking at the Green New Deal, we also need to take the leadership of the frontline communities in the South Bronx that have been here for generations and make sure that we incorporate them into the conversation so that they can shape what the Green New Deal looks like for them in the local community. So I'm really excited about that. And I'm looking forward to working with the environmental justice community in the Bronx to implement what that looks like locally.
Well, it's interesting. One of the first Green New Deal legislation that was introduced was co-sponsored by AOC and Bernie mm-hmm. Sanders, and it was a Green New Deal for public housing and putting housing activists at the center of this new
so
deal.
Exciting.
So, I was wondering if you wanted to speak to that. Or
No, that's definitely something that I support as well, 100%. We've been doing a lot of door knocking in NYCHA, the New York City Public Housing Authority. And that's something that people welcome because a lot of people live in moldy conditions in their apartments and they're experiencing all these respiratory issues. And they see a connection between sustainability and the environment and their quality of life and just their life in general. So I think that people are looking forward to that. And it's also a great way of creating job opportunities for the local community as well. So in addition to improving their air quality, their quality of life, they'll be accessing local jobs, which is also something that I can say about the Homes Guarantee as well. Because the Homes Guarantee is about building 12 million units of housing over the next decade that, you know, will hopefully be able to identify local people in the community to access those jobs.
It's astonishing how in just the last 2 years with the election of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, but also figures like Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar, how they've managed to almost shift the entire political conversation in the United States and give people a sense of hope. And I'm wondering if you see a connection between that and your campaign, especially in the ability for people to believe that they deserve and can have a better society and a government that actually works for them.
Yes, definitely. I mean, I love those women. You know, I love what they've done in terms of transforming the conversation around politics and having us believe that, yes, we can fight for a kind of political representation that reflects us and reflects our experiences. And another thing I've been saying on the campaign trail is that we need to fight to leave behind the transactional politics of a broken political system and embrace the politics of transformation that the squad has been fighting for since they won their elections. And I love them because they've given us the courage to stand up and demand the kind of dignity and political representation that we deserve. And they're inspiring many women of color, many people from marginalized communities to stand up and fight back and to take stock and take ownership of politics so that we can transform politics and it can reflect the needs and the values of the community in a way that we haven't seen in generations. So I'm grateful to their leadership and guidance in this struggle. And, you know, I think that we need to increase the ranks of the squad all over the world.
Right. And obviously, hopefully you're in Congress. And one of the things that you'll be in charge of is foreign policy. Mm-hmm. It's been a big discussion. One thing that's been interesting about these members is that they've been pretty open in critiquing U.S. imperialism and interventionism abroad. And I'm wondering if you have a stance towards the U.S. military. Obviously, we spend more than any other country on the world. And if you think that we should take a step back in a lot of these countries that the U.S. has been involved in.
Oh, absolutely. I think that, first of all, I'm not an international policy expert, right? And but I am sympathetic to centering human dignity and human values in everything that we do. And unapologetically across the board, whether it's domestic or international, to fight for marginalized, oppressed communities and take their stories at the ground level into consideration in our domestic and our international policy. So that is a value that I hold dear as a directly impacted person here in the South Bronx that I've watched many immigrant communities from around the world come here to make it because they're escaping destabilization in their own countries. They're escaping war. They're escaping hunger. So this is something that we need to recognize as a community. We need to absolutely challenge the military-industrial complex and make sure that 70% of our budget in the United States of America is not used for military expenditures. I think that we need to use use diplomacy as a way of combating issues abroad and take a humanistic approach to diplomacy and foreign policy, because there's a lot of death that's happening around the world. It's unnecessary. And we need to center our human lives. And if we believe in democracy, let's believe in democracy. But let's take the leadership of the countries on the ground and figure out, okay, what's the way forward? We can't just impose a model, you know, onto other countries. We need to take a step back on that. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm wondering if there's a large Hispanic community in the Bronx and Puerto Rican statehood. I don't know if you have an opinion on this or not. You can feel free to. But I was wondering if you are you pro like Puerto Rican statehood or pro their independence or to let them decide?
Well, I'm pro whatever the Puerto Rican people on the island want to do in terms of their destiny. So I'm Puerto Rican and Dominican, like I said earlier in the conversation. I'm a member of the Puerto Rican diaspora, and I'm looking to the grassroots community in Puerto Rico in terms of what they want to see for their future. And more importantly, using the powers of Congress to implement that. So one of the things that we should also be looking at is the repeal of PROMESA, for instance, that's ravaging the island. There's a lot of people that don't have jobs. There's a lot of people that can't afford the living expenses there. And essentially, there's a gentrification crisis happening in the island right now, because pretty soon the island is not going to be affordable for people that have always lived there for generations. And a new crop of people are coming into the island to profit off of the island. So we need to call out Wall Street. We need to have congressional hearings on what that means. And we need to center the grassroots movement of the Puerto Rican people that are living life day to day and under very oppressive, austere conditions. And we need to amplify their struggle. And that's my commitment to Puerto Rico, challenging Wall Street, repealing PROMESA, revisiting the Jones Act as well, which is making life very expensive for people on the island in terms of imports. You know, and we need to look at the FEMA conversation. Why is it that the states on the mainland get so much more assistance and people on Puerto Rico? Why is it that we're consistently treated as second, third, fourth class citizens? We're American citizens. And it's time that the United States and this administration recognizes that.
Yeah, final question. If you end up in the Congress this time next year, one of the key things you're going to come up against is a particularly establishment or centrist party leadership. I wonder if you could put words to how important you feel it is that we have not just the Democratic Party in Congress, but a progressive Democratic Party, and whether you've given any thought that far ahead. I know it's quite a long way down the line, of how you might try and negotiate or deal with the establishment leadership of the Democratic Party.
Well, so I think that the Democratic Party, we need to reclaim our historical roots. Right now, I feel that we're more centrist, we're more on the Republic, we're Republican light, and we're not Democrats anymore. So I think that we need to find our values again, and we need to tap into the soul of the Democratic Party and reclaim that. And I think that when you make policy and when you are intentional about reaching out to the most directly impacted, and when you humanize their experiences and their stories with lived oppression, I think that that's what's missing in the political conversation right now. We're not seeing our humanity. And I think that if we lead with that, with love and compassion, I think there's no telling what we can do together. And obviously, it's really important to increase the numbers of people that are in the squad, right? Or people that share those values, because it's a numbers game too. So if the centrist Democrats don't want to come home, we need to create a space for new people that want to occupy that space. And we need to keep challenging the Democratic establishment for sure. And not only focus on Trump, we also need to clean house inside and make sure that we're living up to our working class values and that we're centering the lives of the most oppressed and that we're creating opportunities for people to get back to work and that we're enforcing trade agreements that make sure that the jobs are stay home instead of incentivizing multinational corporations to bring their jobs abroad. So that's what we need to do as a party. This is a party of the working class, and it's time that we remember that.
Well, on that positive note, I think it's a good place to end the interview. Similis Lopez, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this Our Voices podcast from Open Democracy. If you enjoyed this podcast and would encourage others to listen, why not head to iTunes, subscribe, and leave us a review? Open Democracy is an independent global media platform that is only possible because of your kind donations. To find out more or to make a donation, head to opendemocracy.net.